We're going to start out with a session this morning about the roots of the Chicago Freedom Movement, which was the largest effort of the national civil rights movement outside the South, and one with tremendous lessons for us. Our speaker today will be Bernard Lafayette, who came to Chicago in 1964 as a student to work, or actually as a student who dropped out of school, like many did in the civil rights movement, leaving Fisk University to come to Chicago to help organize people for the kinds of change and for the much larger movement that had come along, and became an important actor in that larger movement when all the various civil rights organizations came together in the Coordinating Council of Community Organizations and created the structure in which Dr. King worked. Bernard Lafayette became an important actor and was a member of the Action Committee that planned the protests and kept them going during that period. He'll be talking to us today about his perspective from the inside. He went back to school, got his doctorate, and is now Vice President for Academic Affairs of American Baptist College and Seminary in Nashville. He'll be taking us back to that time and also reflecting on his view of how things look many years later. All of our speakers are going to be held to a short amount of time to make their initial presentation so that you can participate, ask them questions, and so that they can exchange with each other as well. Dr. Lafayette?
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. Introduction. You've heard it said many times that the speakers are going to be brief, so that you'll be able to ask questions and that sort of thing. Don't believe it. I'm a Baptist preacher by training. And we are very disciplined. We never talk over 2 hours at one time. So if you have any questions, they'll be around lunchtime. And that might best be, where do we get lunch? By the way, is lunch going to be served here?
Downstairs.
Downstairs, good. We'll stay together for lunch. Okay. Well, first of all, let me say that I am pleased to be here and to be part of this conference. And I think it's very important to recognize that the Chicago movement many times is overlooked. We talk about the history of the Martin Luther King movement, and there's not enough that's really said about the Chicago movement, yet it is one of the most significant movements that took place during that period. And I will try to be brief, and it sort of makes me feel very humble to think that I was selected to talk about the history of the movement, and at my young age, to even think that I would be around long enough to talk about history. But I have to recognize that sometime this weekend I'm going to be a grandfather, Cale.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah. So that's a new thing. So that really puts it in perspective when you start talking about grandparentage. So as a grandfather, to soon to be, I would like to say to all the young people, you really should have been there. It was a great experience, one that perhaps will not be repeated in our lifetime. How and why was Chicago chosen? I really appreciate the narrowness of this subject because it helps me to have a tight frame of reference. And I'll stick right to the question because there are many other aspects that should be covered in the course of the discussions today. First of all, as you know, the Southern movement sort of characterized the efforts of the civil rights movement and was predominantly in the news and loomed large in terms of social action and social change during the early 60s. And, of course, the late 50s, starting with Montgomery, Alabama, And by the way, one of the things that gave impetus to the movement in Montgomery was the Supreme Court decision of 54. It gave blacks and those who were struggling for social change some kind of hope in the Supreme Court. There was no hope in the state courts of these southern states like Alabama, Mississippi, you know, Georgia, etc. The legislatures were all black, all white rather, and there was no possibility there to really realize any serious change. So when the Supreme Court made Brown versus the State of Board of Education, Brown versus Board of Education, it gave impetus and some hope to the movement. So the movement in Montgomery, Alabama, was started based on that hope that we have some place where we can get some relief through the courts. So every case that was tried in the South was prepared as if they were going to Supreme Court. It was just that thorough. And that was the only place we expected. We expected to have appeals. So we prepared them even in advance. Well, a couple of things happened. One is that once the movement really got heated up in the South, it became even more dangerous for blacks. I was just hearing last week some incidents that people had on an individual basis where they were beaten by state patrolmen and stuff like that, just individual cases, never made, you know, any kind of national news. This was happening a lot. Blacks were being really attacked. I think it was when the three civil rights workers in Mississippi, Philadelphia, Mississippi, were missing. Johnson, who was president at the time, ordered the, I think it was the National Guard to, you know, comb the rivers. And they had turned up about 11 bodies of black males in the Mississippi River. And, of course, you know, they never were investigated. But I don't know how many blacks ended up in the bottom of the river during that period. So this gave rise to a lot of people getting up, moving north, because they didn't want to get caught up in the hostility of the Southern movement. So a lot of blacks moved north looking for some new places for their homes and families and a new life. Also because of the economic situation. The farms were kind of dying out. You didn't need as many workers because it was mechanized. And blacks were not encouraging, whites were not encouraging blacks to stay. In fact, they were trying to move them out en masse. And just in Brownville, Tennessee, they moved a whole town of blacks out, and they formed Tent City because they were trying to register to vote. And that was unpopular among whites in the South. They weren't that enthusiastic about black political participation. Well, we found a lot of those blacks here in Chicago. Now, there was some feeling that nonviolence could work in the South because, you know, blacks were, they felt more susceptible and receptive to that sort of protest, like kneeling and praying and that sort of business, you know, as part of the protest. But, there was some question about whether or not this tactic would work in the North. Some people say, well, you know, you could do it down there, but not here, in the North. And one of the reasons they say you couldn't do it in the North because blacks just wouldn't take that kind of stuff. They were much more militant, and they couldn't be nonviolent. In fact, that's why some left the South, because they couldn't remain nonviolent. They were, you know, much more militant and would retaliate if they were attacked. The other reason was because the problem was very visible and clear in the South because you had lines, clearly drawn, hard lines of separation and segregation and real signs. I mean, like, you know, in letters, very clearly, you know, colored, white, etc. And therefore, you could really make the issue clear because the lines and signs were clear. But in the north, there was this vague, invisible discrimination that went on, but you couldn't prove it. You could feel it, you knew it was there, but the whites were not hostile toward you. They would smile and pat you on the back, but at the same time, there were no opportunities. And the housing pattern was very hard in terms of its lines. We'll talk more about that later. Well, the American Friends Service Committee decided on the national level they wanted to experiment with nonviolence in an urban ghetto community. And it was in Chicago regional office, and at that time Hale Williams was the executive director. So they sought to find someone who they could bring from the Southern movement who had been involved in nonviolent organizing to see what would happen if you would place someone like this in, say, the ghetto community of Chicago, and what would happen. So, as you suspect, I was the person. Jim Lawson, who was very much involved in the nonviolent movement, and had trained us in Nashville, called me and recommended that I should do this. So I dropped out of school for the second time and came to Chicago and served on the staff of their American Friends Service Committee on a summer project. At the end of the summer, Cale kept me out of school and didn't give me any scholarship money to go back. But we moved to Chicago and started experimenting with nonviolent. And we'll talk about nonviolent organizing later on, I believe, in the program. Yes. But the choice of Chicago was really interesting because SCLC at the time was considering three communities as a possible pilot for a northern project. One was Rochester, New York. And Rochester, because the Rochester Council of Churches had raised money and they wanted a movement. They were prepared to fund the program, and they wanted to create a community organization, and they really made strong appeals for SCLC to form its northern base there in terms of movement in Rochester, New York. Another area that was vying for SCLC's presence and involvement was Boston, which was a good logical place because Martin Luther King had roots there. They were very proud of their son and graduate alumnus in Boston University. And so that was a very strong appeal there. Very close relationship with many of the black ministers who had either had gone to school with Martin Luther King or participated in his ministerial relationships. And actually, Boston and Rochester was very appealing. Number one, because you had fewer blacks to deal with. You have fewer blacks, most times it's a little more manageable, the fewer there are. Whites have learned this, over the years. That's why they try to keep, the numbers down. Kind of hard, I know. It's difficult. But because they have a lot of babies, So it's kind of hard to control. It's like South Africa, They just keep on coming, And maybe that has been the survival of blacks as opposed to, say, Native Americans, Blacks don't give up, But in any event, there was strong liberal support in Boston. White liberal support among the clergy and academics, etc. Same thing in Rochester, which is predominantly white ministerial group. They wanted to be involved. They were very much for the movement. They wanted to experience change. And they could be a real force. Why Chicago? Well, there were those on the SCLC staff who argued for these other places, but I was already in Chicago. So that was one of the reasons why, I was interested in coming to Chicago. Besides, there were some other reasons. The Urban League had just completed a study back in 1963, I believe, or 64. Y'all might be able to help me with that, those of you who have remained in Chicago, much more aware of the history. But in that study, they made several observations. One was that 43% of the blacks in Chicago were either first or second generation from Mississippi. And that was a startling statistic. So you had a lot of people from Mississippi, blacks. And this was tested. I remember I was driving around with Jim Bevel when he had just come to Chicago. And I said, Bevel, all these people come from Mississippi. Because Bevel was from Mississippi. And he was in Chicago. That was one of the 43% right there. So I told him, I said, all these people are from Mississippi. I said, well, I'll check it out. So we drove to the service station and getting some gasoline. And so I said, when the last time you went home, man? So he said, oh, man, I went home last weekend. I said, yeah. I said, what part are you from? You know, obviously Mississippi. Say, Pascagoula or something, you know. Right. So, I mean, you know, you could just at random talk to blacks and you find a lot of them have their roots in Mississippi. And it was obviously why, because you know, it's a straight line. The train ran straight on up the line. And those who couldn't afford to come to Chicago, they stopped off in East St. Louis, right? Yeah, St. Louis. Those from Alabama went all the way to Detroit. Okay? And those from Florida went to New York. And some of them couldn't go all the way, so they went up north, like to North Carolina. You know, which was another place that they thought was north. But getting out of, you know, the south was important for them, they thought. Now, the argument was made, and it was very forceful, and that was that, number one, Martin Luther King would be in a very receptive community among the blacks, because he was certainly aware, having grown up in the South, and was acquainted with Mississippi, and he would have that kind of appeal. He knew the language. He knew the feelings, the sentiment. He could interpret the attitudes of the people. That was one strong element. The other thing is that you had very large churches, large black churches in Chicago, some of your larger black churches, as opposed to Boston or Rochester. So you had a natural constituency. Okay? So therefore that was that connection and that relationship. The other thing, which was not unrelated, was the fact that you had a strong academic community in Chicago. And you could appeal to the intellectual community. And there was a strong sense, you know, like the church council and other kinds of groups where there was activity in terms of social change among the clergy. It was not a dormant group as such. In fact, even some of those, you know, in Chicago had supported Martin Luther King's stand, you know, on the war in Vietnam. So there was a liberal community, a strong liberal community. The other reason was the fact that when you look at movements we had in the South, where large numbers of Northerners joined the movement, we had, a disproportionate number, large number of participation from Chicago. On the Selma March, for example, we had a whole plane load of just clergy coming from Chicago, joining the movement on the march. We had strong Jewish participation. In fact, in a demographic study of the Freedom Rides, the largest single element of people you had participating in the Freedom Ride was young Jewish women from Chicago, which I thought was interesting statistic. So Chicago, in terms of fundraising, some of your larger contributions were coming out of Chicago, not New York. Okay? Even though we had an office located in New York. SCLC had a fundraising office. That fundraising office is now in Chicago. It has been for a number of years, for obvious reasons. So, in other words, there was strong support already from Chicago. Now, the single most important reason, there are three other reasons, and I won't put a value on them at all. One is that you had a CCCO, Coordinating Council of Community Organizations, so you already had the unity of the different community groups in Chicago. And more importantly, they had invited Martin Luther King. It's pretty nice to have an invitation, you know, from a unified group. And that CCCO was perhaps the strongest the organization of its kind, perhaps in the urban city, because we had real diversity on that group. And it was really interesting also because you had non-clergy leadership, per se, you know, in Al Rady. So that was it didn't just become a sort of, you know, religious group of people as such, which would have been fine. But, you know, you had a diversity of different people with different politics and different kind of orientations. And yet you had unity. And you had the large organizations, you know, with their local chapters like NAACP Urban League, also involved. The second most important reason was the fact that you had already the groundwork laid for a movement. And the work that the Service Committee, American Friends Service Committee, had done in terms of the research in the suburban communities. And so the research was there, the figures were there, it was clear in terms of the problem and the description of that problem. I had worked with SCLC, training their staff people for a number of years, and had worked with Martin Luther King in a consultative way all the time. And at this time, Jim Bevel had also come to Chicago. And he was one of the chief organizers for SCLC at that time. And he was decided he was going to come to Chicago because his wife at that time was from Chicago, and they were visiting for a while here. We began to look at the kind of work that had been done and be able to examine that work, and decided that maybe Chicago was right for movement. So, with all of these particular factors in place, it was destined that we would move to Chicago, because you had to have your strong staff people, and if they were saying that we were going to stay in Chicago, and of course Bevel also attracted some of the other SCLC staff people, then that's where things would happen, where the staff people went in terms of SCLC. So I think that all of these factors played an important role in deciding on Chicago. Besides, we had a very large conference at sort of Soldiers Field, which gave a very good outpouring of sort of thing. The final factor, and I'm not saying this is you know, important or more important than anything else, but you had what appeared to be a liberal politics in Chicago. So the assumption is that even though there would be resistance, there would not be outright resistance to change. At that time, Mayor Daley was considered, you know, a liberal mayor, at least by everybody on the outside of Chicago. I don't know about on the inside. But you had black congressmen who were very much a part of the, you know, machine and that sort of thing. And you had a number of blacks who were involved. And so you had strong participation on the part of blacks and liberal politics. That certainly had some, you know, impact because, as I say, it offered some hope for potential change. This decision to come to Chicago was actually a spur of the moment. While there was background and there was investigation and it was a growing kind of thing, the press conference was called and announced at the surprise of everyone. So there was no big gathering as such and a big, you know, announcement. But a press conference was called in Atlanta, and Martin Luther King announced, "We're going to Chicago." And once that decision was made, then all things got in motion and began to move. But there was background and there was movement already in Chicago. And the truth of the matter is, Martin Luther King never tried to start a movement in any place where there was not already a community in motion. So Chicago was chosen because Chicago was already in motion.
I'm going to change the order.